How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
You're tuned in to our 4th of July 2025 flashback weekend, a look back at some of the biggest stories we've been covering for you so far in 2025. What you're about to hear is a previous broadcast.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
In many true crime cases, the origin story doesn't begin with the crime scene. It begins with a rescue, a moment where someone, usually a man, steps into a woman's life at her most vulnerable and appears to save her. But sometimes that rescue is the beginning of a different kind of captivity. Think back to Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka in Canada. At first, he was the charming, handsome boyfriend who helped her escape a strict upbringing, but behind closed doors, he was grooming her into complicity. Or Chris Watts, who seemed like the perfect husband until his entire family vanished. Their wives and families didn't fall in love with monsters. They fell in love with someone who presented as their protector. And in this segment, we're going to dive into the early years of Rex Huerman and Asa Ellerup's relationship, the origin story. What began as friendship and support during a bitter divorce turned into a family unit, a home, a child, and perhaps a carefully constructed illusion. What Robin Drake exposes here is not just a behavioral breakdown of Rex, it's an exploration of why Asa may have never asked the right questions and how her emotional needs, past traumas, and empathetic nature may have been the very traits that made her the perfect cover. As we peel back the layers of their relationship, how they met, how they lived, and how their home was shaped, we begin to understand the difference between a life shared and a life staged. In the comment section, let me know what you think on YouTube about all of this. If you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, hit subscribe there so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case. And do check out our YouTube channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Just search that. And like I said, tell us what you think. Yeah, I got a lot of questions, and including some about that secret place. But let's watch some of the clips, and we'll kind of get into some of those because we're going to see the secret place. We're going to see all sorts of interesting things about what went on.
Creepy shit
but
there, boy.
Let's start out at the beginning. This is how she met Rex, because it kind of sets the scene for everything that goes on afterwards. This, again, is from the documentary
I
special.
I moved here in Peacock with Rex in November of 1995. No, that's my favorite. I met Rex when I was 18 years old. He was going to college. I was working at 7-Eleven. I was born in Iceland. My younger brother was adopted to an Icelandic family, and I was adopted to America. But because of that, I traveled a lot to Iceland with my family and Rex. He traveled a lot. He went on archaeological digs. He's the kind of guy you turn your head and you go take a look at, you know? He was tall, handsome, debonair young man. I love tall, dark, and handsome. That's me. And at that time, I was madly in love with the man. There's no doubt about that. But then I met my first husband and got married. But things did not go well at all. After my son Christopher was born, my ex-husband became somebody completely different. I was in the process of getting a divorce. Christopher's father, he wasn't very nice about it. He said to me, there's no way in the world he was going to be okay with me being happy with somebody else. Rex was the kind of person that you could call, even if you just wanted to talk, and that's it. We were friends. Everybody needs a friend. So Rex came with me one time to go pick up my son. Rex was standing there, and he heard what he said. Rex then says, okay, I'm not worried. Let's get a lawyer. Let's take him to court. And then he paid for the lawyer to take him to court. So fast forward, I got my divorce. There was no reason to hold back. You know what I mean? So Rex said to me, I've got a nice house. I mean, it's not big, not elaborate. How about you come and see if you'd like to stay there? Yes, I would love to. And then I found out I was pregnant with Rex's baby. And he said to me, well, how do you feel about marrying me? And I said, yes. There's a picture of me, and I'm looking up going, I finally got him. He's mine.
She still seems to have that same vigor about her of, he's mine. Everybody needs a friend, right? Lot to unpack there. I'm just going to go with you. What stood out to you?
Watching it again that time, there's one statement she said. There's a lot of statements in there. Yeah. You can obviously see. I mean, if you didn't know what you know now about him, you're like, wow, what a great guy.
Yeah, I mean, they look like a normal, like, if you look at what they are today and you look at those pictures from 1995, it looks like pretty much any normal couple's wedding family photos.
It does. And here's something to kind of go to what I was saying about why he selected her. Again, was it a conscious choice because he wanted to use her to cover his horrible tracks? I just think it's intuitive. I think it was an attractiveness. And here's the attractiveness part. She said her ex-husband turned into somebody different.
Uh-huh.
She lacked curiosity through that entire life arc. So in other words, she was unable to see anything that's presented deeper than the surface.
Yeah.
I don't like using that word gullible because I don't like demeaning anyone or like, victim blaming in this, but she doesn't have a deeper curiosity to understand why people have the actions they have. She takes people on their surface. I mean, it's a very endearing quality people have, you know, where, but at the same time, it made her susceptible to predators.
Yeah.
And the first husband was a predator from at least took advantage of her, dumped her and left.
Yeah.
And she didn't see it coming, turned into a different person. And what happened the second time? Turned into a different person. She's completely and still doesn't believe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big part of that. I was wondering about that because she was able to recognize bad behavior at one point in time, it seems. But nothing beyond it really much until Rex comes in and says, "Well, let's do something about this." And who knows? I have no idea what her situation was. Maybe the idea of getting an attorney at the time was just unattainable, you know, financially.
7-Eleven.
Yeah. So there probably wasn't a lot of options. It's that X kind of had her where he wanted her in terms of control financially and all of that. Then Rex comes in as the savior. I got this house. You know, I can be this father. We already are, you know, we're friends and this could turn into something. And I mean, it seems like if you have pure intent, okay, that's how some nice relationships begin, you know, coming out of some, you know, darkness and everybody kind of getting their stuff together and we're a happy family unit and it works. Unless it's Rex Heuermann and he already allegedly has killed somebody 3 years prior to you meeting. So that's, there's a lot in there. But the no curiosity, there's just so many questions.
And she's also, you know, in nursing, you know, my daughter being a nurse too. Yeah. I mean, these are people that are also, you know, biologically geared for empathy and taking care of others and that whole embracing aspect of it. And, you know, a lot of nurses do nursing because they don't want to be doctors because it gets a little too clinical. They like being close to patients.
Yeah.
They like taking care of others, you know, and that just emanates from her. You know, regarding the kids, the family aspect of things, traveling to Iceland for family. I mean, here's a woman, you know, that's working at 7-Eleven with not much money, yet it seems, you know, again, let's take that intuitive leap, you know, doing these trips to Iceland and I can tell you, I've been there. It's the most expensive place I've ever been in the entire world.
Really?
Oh my God, it's horrendous because everything's got to be flown in.
Sure.
All they grow there is tomatoes, you know, in the thermals around the volcanoes. So there's not a lot, it's an expensive place to live, expensive place to visit. It's just very congruent with the empathy aspect of things, not curious, just taking care of others, being taken advantage of by some. You know, her ex-husband just didn't have the reps in hiding secret life that Rex had when they met. And so it was a great choice by him for what he wanted to do.
What do you make of the archaeological digs? That's kind of an interesting
It's kind of creepy, wasn't it? He's like, oh, where did this start from? Like, I mean, he's got odd habits, doesn't he?
He does.
He's got some odd. There's not a lot. I really tried to research his parents, his upbringing, these types of things. Like my first thing I saw was he bought his parents' house. How many other serial killers have bought their parents' house? BTK did.
Yeah.
Because I was curious on that because control that environment is so, it's not a huge amount. It has happened, but not a huge amount because that's the first thing that really struck me. Why would you buy your parents' house? What's going on there? And then also, no improvements to it. Very, very limited improvements. I mean, the place is run down. That's what sparked my curiosity. And I'm like, does he have money? Does he not use his money? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the health of Asa. He's definitely not paying health insurance for dental insurance or anything on her. No. I mean, you know, it's kind of sad. It's like, what are you doing with your time and money? Yeah. It's not the house. It's not healthcare. See what I mean? And she wasn't curious about it.
Well, and it was so normalized. So she didn't even realize just how strange it was that these somewhat basic things were not being taken care of, because she comes from a place where she was adopted to America, you know, that so that whole, you know, familial connection is kind of different. So you get that she's led a kind of rough life growing up, abuse, rape. There was a lot that woman went through.
And there's no materialistic, you know, aspect to her. It doesn't seem like what it is all to her is emotional. She keeps going to that family, and he was providing family for her.
Yeah.
That she had her children. She's close to her children. I mean, so all her needs, you know, people balance the needs emotionally and physically and materialistically all very differently. And you can see her her needs are being met emotionally, and that's what Rex was able to do.
Yeah.
And he also is not a very materialistic guy, because look at the wreck in which he lived. Mm-hmm. I mean, just crazy, especially in Long Island where they lived. That's a little off.
I wonder about the house. We'll talk more about the house in a minute. Let's take a look at her showing off some of the house. This is her giving a tour of the gun room. This is very close to and part of Rex's lair, basically, in the basement that we've been hearing about. Locked off with a vault door, which I don't know. I mean, it's kind of odd in your basement. I've seen some people do it with gun rooms, but I don't know. It's a little odd. Let's take a look.
This is the steel door. It had a combination lock. It's this lever here. It's a very easy way to get out, so no one can get locked in here. Now, this is the room where he displayed his firearms collection.
So the famous gun room, when I sat there, I recall vividly that he said, in 30 years, you're the fourth person to ever be in this room. And I was like, wow. And that's when he showed me his collection. You see, he started collecting rifles and all kinds of guns early on when he was 18. And it was an amazing collection.
There's nothing in this case that suggests that those guns were utilized in the commission of any crime.
A walk-in gun vault, that's one thing. But a secret room? I was like, oh my God.
According to a colleague of Rex Huerman's, he had a room specifically built in his basement that even his wife was not allowed to enter.
That's the secret room everybody talks about.
It's kind of a walk-in closet in the gun room that is actually right under the stairs.
He didn't want anybody to have access to it, the secret room, so nobody would know. Not because he was hiding anything, but because he wanted to secure a safe in there.
And I actually didn't see what the inside of it actually looked like until after all this happened. I couldn't get in there myself.
All completely normal behavior, right? Normalized. But yeah, not normal.
That's what you grow up with. That's normal behavior. And also, from what I understand, too, it's also his childhood bedroom.
Yes. And that's a point I want to get to on this, because I think there's something to that. And also I think it plays into why the house has never been updated, why it still looks like 1965 in that.
Can't basement, have contractors in there tearing shit apart.
No, you can't. But I wonder if there's a level of him finding peace in the familiarity of childhood, because essentially if he goes back into that basement, which was his childhood bedroom, and it's his kind of like safe, happy place, it makes you wonder what was going on in childhood with Rex too. What was going on in that basement? Was there something going on in that basement, or were those like happy, pure times before he got into this dark road? Or, you know, was he always kind of doing some stuff down there that was kind of off, that he kept secret from the rest of society, but it still has a element of comfort because it is from childhood, and he was able to kind of weave in this darkness that he got into in adulthood into a safe place, and then it all kind of normalized it for him in life. Psychologically.
I think all of it, Tony. Yeah. I think these are all parts of a whole. I mean, let's take a look, you know, by comparison of current cases, and again, they're both innocent until proven guilty, but you look at a Brian Koberger, without actually, we don't have to place his name, but someone like him who's a accused serial killer, gives you a much different vibe. There's someone who's really, really with a broken brain, trying to seek out something, some sensations to give him a sense of fulfillment. I get a different feeling and a tenor from Huerman. And I just get the feeling that these are half of these behaviors he's doing were learned behaviors. I don't necessarily think he was like born doing a lot of this weird shit that typically pure broken brain people do. Mm-hmm. I think half of it was learned. I think maybe coping mechanisms he was having, because from what I understand, he was bullied pretty decently growing up. And yeah, safe places, psychological comfort from being in the bedroom that, you know, that you grew up in. And the other thing that struck me too is only four people to visit the Golden Vault in his gun collection. So here's what's kind of striking about that too. Years ago, there's a good book that was put out. I can't remember the author's name, but the book is called Snoop. Mm-hmm. And what Snoop talks about is what our stuff says about us. In other words, things we have on display. Like, for example, you know, behind me here, I have my books. I got my retired FBI creds. I got pictures of my kids. These things I have displayed for you, the world. I got my Marine Corps emblem here. I mean, they mean things to me, but these are things I project out to the world because they're what I want you to see as part of who I am to make a whole. And now here's the interesting thing. What he said was only four people have seen this gun vault. In other words, he didn't have this collection for his persona he's projecting to the world. This was his enjoyment for himself. Mm-hmm. That's a lot different than what people generally typically put out there. So he got his self enjoyment from that gun collection. So that whole room and that whole complex and small downstairs, I call it a complex, but that whole small secret place downstairs was purely for his psychological comfort. No one else's. That was his secret place to feel good about himself.
I want to read that book. Sam Gosling, by the way, is the author.
Yeah, Sam Gosling. That's it. Yep.
Of Snoop. That looks really interesting because I have all sorts of stuff around here. You can't see it on camera. But yeah, I mean, I'd be really curious to learn about that. I have all sorts of, like, I have a lot of childhood stuff over here on the wall. I have, like, in my childhood, I was working in radio. I have mic flags. I have all sorts of radio stuff. I have Ghostbuster stuff. I have things that my grandfather gave me. Like, I have a Jim Beam bowling pin where the top comes off. And it was, I remember him showing that to me as a child. I'm like, oh, this is so neat, a bowling pin. And it's actually when he was
all part of the arc, Tony. That's why, you know, one of the questions I asked you, you know, together, working together, you know, for everyone else listening, is like, hey, what was that inspiration all those years ago that helped Tony be who he is today?
Yeah.
And that's all these things that we hold on to are part of that arc.
The stuff tells a lot. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
And then it's not just, it tells a lot, but it tells us what we want others to see it too. So what you'll see in Gosling's book is that you look at the, like, if you go to someone's office or like this is my home office, where are the angles? Are they angled for me? Or are they angled for you?
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you what is this, what someone's trying to project, or is it something they're using for themselves? And so it's really, again, there's no right or wrong here. Yeah. It's just assessing part of understanding everyone. So all these things that Rex had was not about other people consuming what he had. It was all purely for him.
Because
this was not a show house. He didn't have what appears a show job.
Yeah.
Dollhouse, that dollhouse to me is really striking because he's a crafted, you know, a gifted craftsman, a woodworker. You know, he had habits and collections that I saw as really pretty different from what we've seen from others. So one of the things I was also looking at is how was he able to placate himself in between kills? In between murders that he was using for his own gratification. I think that's why he had such extreme, what might, at least to me, seem more extreme collections and extreme hobbies, because he really needed that level in order to do that. You know, the soliciting prostitutes, that's an extreme behavior. Stalking prostitutes, extreme behavior. Yeah. Huge, massive gun collections, going to rifle ranges, extreme behaviors. So, really interesting.
Yeah, and especially, and we'll take a listen to some of the clips of the daughter in just a little bit, because she's really conflicted about this. I mean, she had in her mind, a normal dad who would build a dollhouse for her, who would spend time with her, who would do things. And as she describes it, you can love him and you can hate him at the same time, because she's trying to reconcile childhood with what reality is. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Thank you so much. What we've just explored with Robin isn't just a story of a secret room in a basement. It's a story of psychological architecture. How someone like Rex Huerman allegedly built a world so carefully designed that no one thought to open the wrong door. That gun room, that vault, that was a sanctuary, not built for protection, built for privacy. A place where the life he lived and the life he hid could coexist without ever touching. And awesome? whether by trauma, temperament, or design, may have been someone who never wanted to knock on the locked door in her basement, especially if the man behind it once rescued her from an even darker chapter in her life. There's something chilling about how ordinary this story begins. A young woman working at a 7-Eleven, a college student who offered her kindness, a family formed around what seemed like mutual support. When you look closely, what emerges isn't a love story. It's a behavioral pattern. A woman who had been hurt before. A man with secrets he needed to protect, and an emotional contract they both entered into. One seeking safety, the other seeking cover. It makes us all the more unsettling is how easily this could have been anybody's story. Most people don't end up married to a monster. They end up married to someone who makes them feel seen, safe, and understood until it's too late. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comment section on YouTube about what you just saw.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
In some of the most infamous criminal cases in American history, there's one thread that cuts deeper than violence. It's denial. And it's not just denial by the perpetrator, but by those who loved them. When Chris Watts confessed to killing his family, his mother refused to believe it. When serial killers like Israel Keyes or Rodney Alacia were exposed, family and friends often said the same thing. Not the man I knew, because the person behind closed doors was someone else entirely. And now we find ourselves hearing those same words echoed in the Gilgo Beach case from Asa Elrup, the wife of accused serial killer Rex Huerman. In this segment, we examine one of the most emotionally loaded sections of the documentary on Peacock right now. It's Asa expressing and telling Rex she loves him. Or if telling him she loved him would hurt him. It's a baffling statement on its face until you look deeper, until you understand projection, trauma, and how the mind reshapes reality to preserve the life it's built. Robin Drake brings his decades of behavioral analysis with the FBI to unpack what's really going on beneath Asa's words. Is she protecting Rex or protecting herself from the truth? And what does it mean when a family member still sees a father where the world sees a perpetrator? It's not about excusing anyone. It's about understanding how people survive unthinkable truths and how sometimes denial is the only thing holding someone together. And as you watch in the comment section on YouTube, tell me what you think. Have you been through a trauma like this? Hopefully not quite this bad, but maybe. Or a trauma where the person you think you knew for years turns out to be somebody completely different. How did you deal with it? Again, comment section on YouTube on this video. Please let us know what your thoughts are. I want to take a look at this other clip here, because it's a really weird statement. It goes back to Asa, and it talks about not wanting to make Rex upset and what would make Rex upset. And the answer to that question is very bizarre. Let's take a look, and we will talk about it on the other side.
Bye. I'm talking to him all the time, but he only has a certain amount of time to be able to make calls. So I can't get too comfortable talking to him about things that are going to hurt him.
What would hurt him? What are the things that hurt him?
Telling him that I love him. That will hurt him. The two of us were married for 27 years. We were 100% part of each other's lives. Does everybody really believe everything they hear?
Rex Huerman is a demon.
Charged as a serial killer.
Do you really believe everything that's being said?
This man is a sexual sadist.
He enjoyed torturing his victims.
Well, we didn't buy it.
I telling him that I loved him, that would make him upset. What does that mean?
So here's my conjecture.
Yeah.
I think there's a decent probability that she's placing the empathy that she has on him, that he has, that he's just like her, that he, like, she sees him as a great family man. And I think that she thinks he sees himself as a good family man, and that because it would hurt her, you know, kind of like, you know, so let's take a look at the Delphi murders, Richard Allen real quick. Richard mm-hmm. Allen was devastated by what this was doing to his wife and his family, you know, being accused of murder, murdering these girls. Yeah. And I think that she thinks that it would, since it would hurt her to hear, you know, that he loves her if she's going to jail. I think it's the pain of the relationship. The pain of being emotionally separated is what would hurt her, was being emotionally separated from the family man. And so I think she's then reversing it and putting it on him that he wouldn't want to hear how much she loves him, because it'll hurt him even more that they're separated. I think that was the really intent there. What was interesting also was, you see how long of a pause she had too with the blocking of the eyes closed? Because she's really trying to, I don't think she understands what would hurt Rex. I think what she was thinking of was what would hurt her to mm-hmm. hear.
Yeah.
And then place that on him, because it would hurt her to hear him say how much he loves her, because it would just remind her that they're separated and might not ever see each other again.
Yeah.
So again, I think it was her superimposing what mm-hmm. she would feel on him.
That makes sense. Here's another clip of Asa talking about
this life. Is going to be the first time that I'm going to go to court and see Rex. Of course, I'm anxious. Everybody's going to be staring at me. That should do it. All of these girls that were found on Gilgo Beach, they were girls. They were somebody's daughter. They were somebody's sister. Nobody deserves what they got. But Rex was not seeing prostitutes. He's a family man. He didn't do this. I would need to hear it from Rex, face to face, that he killed these girls for me to believe it. My husband never kept me out of anything. That's why I'm going to the courthouse. That's why I want to see it for myself. It's important for me to know what he's going through. And I want to be a part of it.
There's a lot there. I don't even know where to begin. Go for it. What stood out to you?
She said I'd need to hear it from him. Yeah. She wouldn't believe it anyway.
That's why that was what my question was, and my mind went somewhere else. What would happen if she heard it from him? What if she just heard that he admitted that he was seeing prostitutes? Because that answers that question. That was a question I think a lot of us had. Was this kind of an open relationship, at least for him, where he could go do it and she just kind of, you know, when he does it on the side and I'm okay with it, or clearly not?
I don't think so. Yeah. I think so. Again, trying so hard to have deep empathy on this, like placing myself in her shoes. Like, I think the response would be, Rex, don't say that. That, you know, you don't have to say that to save me. Or I mean, I think she's going to place herself in the role. She would place herself in the role of thinking him sacrificing himself in some way to save her and the killed kids by admitting it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's no way I don't think in a million years she'd accept anything he'd say or anyone will say about him. As of today.
Yeah.
And she's not going. So again, here's what was interesting too. The other statement she made, I need to see what he's going through.
Yeah.
He's not going to court to learn the truth. She just wants to go see him to see what he's going through. Again, what's that? It's empathy, him, connection, comfort. I mean, it has nothing to do with facts and details. To her, again, from her own words, from her own behaviors, I don't think there's a fact or detail anyone could present, including Rex, that would say he did this. And anything he says is to protect her and the family, because he's a family man. I mean, so you see how she's encapsulated that one statement, he's a family man, but it's going to rationalize every single behavior that's incongruent with what that her image of him is.
Yeah, I agree. I want to see, I don't know if we played
the allegation
one.
Is that when you married Rex, he'd already committed a homicide. Had you had any knowledge of that, you wouldn't have married this man. And then chose to have children with him, correct?
No, there's no abnormal behavior that I ever actually noticed. And if there was any knowledge at all, some unusual behavior in that man, I would have walked out the door.
You wouldn't have brought your young son
no.
to live in an environment like that?
No.
That's an odd one. That's the one I've been trying to, I don't know which one that was. Her body language in there is really interesting, where she's taught when she's asking or answering that question of there was no abnormal behavior there. She just kind of goes on that list there, but she's not looking up at the camera. She's not looking at the guy. She's down. And then all of a sudden her head pops up. I wouldn't have done. It reminds me of a Karen Reed clip where she like, what kind of a mad woman would I be? Or what kind of a killer would I be if I did that with the crazy eyes? It was that where it's like, I'm going to look down and then that to address what everybody else is saying is reality. What was your take?
Yeah, she didn't know what to say. Blocking, you know, from having to face it. And then mm-hmm. she thought she came up with a great statement to counter it.
Yeah.
I think she got excited the fact that she came up with something to say that was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, she's trying to say, I'm very smart. I can read people well. And I wouldn't have made that choice for my kids.
Yeah.
That was her expression. I think she got excited by the fact that she came up with a
gotcha. Kind of. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I wouldn't have done that. He's yeah. not that guy. God, look, I'm smart. I would never bring my kids in that thing. Because again, if you approach everything you hear from her with that, again, that underlying understanding of she was never curious.
Mm-hmm.
It answers every question.
No, it really does. Here's how
And so why did you bring, you know, your kids into this environment? Because you didn't ask the questions. What are you doing with your time? Why are you buying your parents' house? Why do you have a secret room? You know, I mean, why do you have a room that I can't go see? Why do you have this massive gun collection? What do you get at? You know, not that you have the gun collection. It's like a simple question. It's like, what enjoyment do you have from the gun collection?
Yeah.
You know, what enjoyment do you have by having your family house? What enjoyment do you have by not doing renovations or improvements? What enjoyment do you have? I mean, so again, always asking a what question to understand the person you've been married to for your entire life since 18 years old, you've been together, mm-hmm. you know, but that lack of curiosity allowed him to feel safe. It's why such a collaborative relationship. Yeah. They both felt very safe with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, mutually really beneficial. Did. I mean, it's a very symbiotic relationship. She got the family man from her procession and he got someone who didn't ask any questions whatsoever.
Yeah. And it was just all it was like a perfect storm, I think, for her to be able to.
Which then to bring, you know, if you getting off of the human side of this, which brings in of how this has fallen apart for him. When you control that environment and you get placated by the comfort around you, you make a lot of mistakes over time. Mm-hmm. And I think when we've only seen a glimpse of the evidence of his missteps. And I think when the trial hits, we're going to see a lot of mistakes he made because he got very, very comfortable in that house of knowing, asking questions.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a spooky thing too about nobody asking questions is the fact that some of the bodies literally had Asa's hair on them, had the daughter's hair
yeah.
on them as DNA. I mean, if that's not, I mean, I don't know what's going through her mind, going through Asa's mind, other than, is this just some big setup? They're framing my husband. I mean, she doesn't say those sort of things in this documentary at all, but you'd imagine there has to be something going through her mind of, well, what is the real reason? If it's not him, how did this happen? How did they find this stuff? How did this all work out? Is it all a setup? I mean, that's an easy one just to jump to if you don't have any explanations and you feel you don't need to come up with any. Just tell yourself that.
But you're actually being curious that she's yeah. not.
then she may not even be wondering at all. It's just
She's not wondering who did it. She just knows it's not him. That's all she's focused on. The family man doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know who did it because it's all set up because Rex is not that guy. I mean, it keeps circling back to the simple thing. She's not curious. She's not asking questions and she doesn't, she doesn't even want to know. Because not wanting to know means you are even entertaining the thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's entertaining that thought whatsoever. It's just not cognitive for her. It's impossible in her mind, in her universe. Him doing this is completely impossible. And there's not one thing anyone can say, including him, that can change her mind.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even at the end of the day, if he comes out and is like, yep, I did this. If he pulls a BTK at the end and is like, here's what I did. And he goes down the laundry list. I think she may keep telling herself he's just saying that to preserve our family.
Yeah, you know, the one other area I was curious about, because he's been doing this supposedly for such a long time. Mm-hmm. I looked up the number of typical victims serial killers have, and it still ranges between 7 to 8 murders that mm-hmm. they commit is on the average for a serial killer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's outliers on that. But for the number of years he's been doing this, again, it didn't range outside of that 7 or 8, you know, when I'm trying to do these comparisons, but I would not be surprised if there's more that pop up. Now, I know they're doing a good deep dive to try to identify potential more, because here's a challenge with it, is serial killers typically have a methodology for what they do because that gives them that sexual and emotional satisfaction from reliving these things, the way to position bodies, you know, all the things they do. But because he assumingly was killing before he moved into his parents' house, mm-hmm. the way he did that is going to be different than when he moved into his parents' house. And then the fact that they're planning on moving down to North Carolina, he's visited all these other places, it's going to shift up how he did these murders. And so that fingerprint of what serial killers generally have is going to have shifted from every location. So I just don't get the sense from him that his gratification was coming, I think, in a different way than other serial killers, you know, because serial killers are positioned the bodies, they'll angle some of the bodies to face them, even though they're not physically there because they can think about it, they can imagine it. And I actually looked up, as I remember last week, we were talking about this, him creating these detailed lists and checklists of things to do. Originally, I was thinking he did that so he could actually look at that to get that same satisfaction, but apparently he deleted those and destroyed those. Well, mm-hmm. he thought he did. So that wasn't it. So I keep thinking about where is he getting that satisfaction? How is he getting this need constantly met over a period of time? So I think there's a lot more we're going to see and be revealed here.
Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Thank you so much for your insight in all of this. What Robin just laid out is as unsettling as it is illuminating. Because when someone's reality collapses, they often build a new one just to survive. Asa Elrup isn't just protecting Rex, she's protecting the identity she's lived in for nearly 3 decades. The mother, the wife, the woman who believed she married a good man. To accept that Rex might be a monster isn't just devastating, it's existential. It means that every Christmas morning, every vacation, every loving moment she clung to may have existed beside something unthinkable. And for Asa, that contradiction is unbearable. So she rejects it, understandably. She can't even entertain the question because asking it opens the doors to a world she refuses to live in. Victoria, her daughter, is standing on a very different edge. She's younger, more pliable to truth, but deeply conflicted. Robin framed it perfectly. This is a family navigating two parallel universes, one built on memory, the other built on evidence. And when those two realities finally collide, something inside has to give. But perhaps the most chilling revelation is this. Rex didn't need to hide anything because no one was ever asking. Asa never questioned the gun vault, the secret room, the finances, or the late nights. Not because she was complicit, but because the world she was living in didn't require those questions. And for Rex, that was a perfect environment to carry out whatever dark truth he may be hiding. This is more than a case about a man accused of a serial murder. It's a study in manipulation, emotional survival, and how denial in the right setting can become just as dangerous as the crimes themselves.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Rex Huerman.
Sometimes when the truth finally cracks through the surface, it doesn't bring clarity, it brings chaos. We've seen it before. Think of Kerry Rawson, the daughter of Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, who found out almost overnight that the man who'd tucked her in at night was a sadistic murderer. She called it a nuclear bomb in the middle of her life, and in her memoir, she wrote that it took years just to begin to feel right again. It's not just about grief. It's not just about anger. It's the complete collapse of identity. Because when your entire life was built on a person who turns out to be someone else, you're left questioning not just them, but yourself. That's where we are in the Gilgo Beach case. In our next segment here, we watch Asa Elrup navigate the wreckage, literally and emotionally. The home she shared with Rex Heuermann is torn apart by law enforcement. Her memories are shattered. Her stability is gone. But what's most jarring isn't her anger or confusion. It's her refusal to let go of the version of Rex she still sees. And then there's Victoria, their daughter. She's younger. She's conflicted, but she's also staring into a new reality, one that Asa may never accept. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is joining us to walk us through the psychology of denial, generational difficulties and differences in processing trauma, and what happens when the multiverse collapses, when the father you adored becomes the man the world calls a monster. This is where it gets personal. This is the collateral damage of evil hiding in plain sight. And as you watch, let me know your thoughts in the comments on YouTube. If you're listening to us on a podcast platform, be sure to hit subscribe there. And then do check us out on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi so you can be part of our conversations on all of these cases. I want to focus a little bit more on Asa here and seeing what some of her reactions have been to this. Here's another one we're going to take a look at. This is her walking around the house shortly after the raid took place. And what she says at the end is quite poignant. Let's take a look.
When we got back home after they raided it, it was not recognizable. No beds, no clothes. Our bathroom sink was broken. They should have actually deemed our house uninhabitable.
Oh, look at this.
It was as if they were trying to leave us for dead.
They broke that,
they
didn't
just pulled
they?
This out of the wall.
They pulled it out of the wall. I think that's what that hole in the wall was from.
What is in here?
Garbage, nothing.
Well, something was in here because it's not in here now.
The kids, they were crying themselves to sleep before we actually got into the house. We were all doing it. Fear, anxiety, guilt, all of those emotions are all going like a roller coaster, rolling, rolling, and rolling, and rolling. But we needed to come home. They had a lot of sentimental stuff in the house. And I still feel Rex is here.
There you go. That's the one. I still feel Rex is here, as if he's some sort of spiritual entity.
So here she is.
He's alive. He's in prison. But I still feel Rex is here in a real warm tone. Like I still, it's like if someone died, a loved one, a great person in your world died. And to her, that kind of is what happened.
Yeah. I don't think she's ever, no matter how the trial goes, even found guilty. And she's even said in other clips too, you know, I don't think she's ever going to accept that he is the other person she didn't know.
Yeah.
She is so wrapped up in the image of him, and they were married a long time. They were together a long time. And that's a lot of reps of him being what she keeps describing as a family man, a family man, a family man, a family man. You know, from her perspective, what he was presenting her was someone that is always taking care of her, sending her on nice vacations, taking care of the kids, providing from her context. So just watching and listening to her throughout this, being presented with hard evidence, you know, of accusations and details, and she's not accepting any of it. And I don't think it's a survival mechanism. I just think she just doesn't believe it because that's not who she knew.
Yeah. No, I agree. Let's see some more of Asa in action here.
I'm sorry. That planning document is so Dexter style. It's absolutely absurd.
Say if they really did happen down here, he really must have been like Superman
for us not to have noticed anything ever. This used to be like his bedroom growing up. A lot of his, like, not only just gun stuff, but a lot of his childhood stuff, family heirlooms, were in this room. So for him to do that in this room, a little unrealistic, but I guess not impossible.
No, sorry. You want to know how I feel? They are picking, making assumptions for their narrative. I know that. I've known Rex since I was 18 years old. I know what this room was originally used for. And they're just allegations. He's never said to me, don't use my computer. He's never said, no, I'm not going to give you the password. I need
that. In other words, there's never anything off limits.
There's nothing off limits from Rex Huerman.
There's nothing off limits from Rex Huerman. No. You can't go in part of your house.
Pony, that was the key. When I saw her make that statement, you know why there's nothing off limits? Because she never asked.
Yeah, exactly. It's bio.
So when I saw that clip yesterday, that's when I said to me, that's it. That's the ticket. He didn't have to say anything's off limits because she never asked.
Yeah.
She was not curious at all. So when you can see all these aspects of his life that he actually segregated out and compartmentalized away from his daughter and his wife and his stepson, they weren't curious. And it's not because it was by intentionally, I don't want to know what's going on. He didn't arouse suspicion. Mm-hmm. And boy, suspicion is an interesting thing. Suspicion is when we have incongruencies in our words and our actions. His words and actions throughout his kids' entire lives, because they grew up with it. And since his wife normalized it from the beginning of their relationship, it's just the way it was.
Yeah.
Again, that they were all groomed into what his normal behavior was, and he was satisfying the family man persona. That's all she wanted. It's all she wanted in life was a family man. And so that's what he provided. And that's not going to blow her narrative. It's so easy to see now watching this. Again, if there's, again, edits can do a lot. You know, there might be other things that they edited out that might be incongruent. But if we're taking this as all there is to her and the daughter and everything, it's easy to see why there's no charges against them. They were just duped by I'll call him a lifestyle con artist, because he actually hid an entire lifestyle from his family under their noses. And it didn't take a lot. It just took a family not being curious.
Yeah. When you've been groomed not to ask questions, and you're not even thinking that you're omitting something, that you're not asking questions, you just don't do it because it's not something you would do because you already trust. That's how people like this get away with shit. It's so shocking to see it. Cause it's like, how? But if you look at it and go, okay, I get it. I wonder the same about, the case of, the daughter, Maddie Soto,
Jen
Soto, because we've looked at that. Like, how did the mom not know? The mom,
Stephen Stearns, right?
Yeah, the mom's literally saying to go sleep with her daughter, not like have sex with her daughter, but she was fine with this boyfriend sleeping in the same bed and thought nothing of it. And it's like, how? It's like this. I think it's a similar type story of how her mind worked, and she had previous trauma, and this guy kind of swooped in as the guy that was going to save the day. It's a similar type dynamic. If you look at Asa and the kids and the dynamic over there, not saying Rex was abusing his children. I don't think he was. It doesn't look like there's any signs of that, but they sure thought he was normal.
And Maddie Soto's mother that was diagnosed with a lot of mental illness as well that she was struggling with. I don't think Asa, I don't think she has been or will be.
Yeah.
But again, that grooming aspect of it, though, is what I agree with is congruent. They're groomed into what normal looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and so actually, just if you want to draw a parallel here, Maddie Soto's mother sided with her boyfriend over Maddie, her daughter.
Yes.
And everything. That would be interesting. Asa obviously is not, if it'll be interesting what it does to the family dynamic, because the daughter is on the fence and thinks her dad did it. It'll be interesting to see what it does to the family dynamic there, because she's not going to go against Rex.
Let's take a look at that, because I think the daughter is dealing with some of that right now. Here's some of her observations on...
Maybe even with all this growing evidence against him, maybe there is some loyalty still to my dad and to my mom, too. Like, listen, whether the world likes it or not, whether I like it or not, he's my dad. That's not gonna, that can't, and they can't take that away from me. I don't know what acceptance looks like. Acceptance to me is just, I have to move on. I think, if he was guilty, it's gonna start to become like a love-hate relationship. This is my dad, and I love him as my dad. The hate is this other side of him that came out. And going forward, I'm not going to interact with him the same way I would have if this never happened. Both the feelings, love and hate, can coexist.
She seems to have the best grip on this of all of the family members. I mean, she's got a whole life to live ahead of her. I mean, she's young. Mom is not. Let me ask you this, in terms of people accepting the reality on reality's terms of what's going on around them with family members or somebody close to them. I wonder if there is a stat. Is it more typical to see younger people accept the reality of what's going on so they can move on with their lives versus someone who's Asa's age, who, she's lived her life for the most part. She's near retirement age by now. And I mean, you'd have to really kind of unearth your entire life and go, well, all that was not quite this what I thought it was. And then start anew at, I don't know how old she is, 60 something, 50 something. I don't know. But I wonder how much of that plays a role in terms of being able to accept and absorb and move forward with reality.
So I don't know the stats on it off the top of my head. What my thoughts on it are this, is that Asa made a choice, Victoria didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be anti your choices would invalidate your choices throughout, from the age of 18 till I think she's in her late 50s right now. I think Rex is, 57, 58, something like that. And they're roughly the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a different thing psychologically that's going on. And it'll be interesting with Victoria too. So she's, as you can see how conflicted she is right now, because she's taken in all the evidence. I mean, she's listening to the news and she's listening to all these things, but here's where I think you're going to see a shift in her, is when if she goes and is in the courtroom and she sees the evidence, she sees what was done, and it becomes more personal at that point.
Yeah.
It's not right now. It's more of a storyline right now. It's more, there's distance between it. It's just words to her that is being described and things. I don't know. I don't think she's seen anything.
Yeah.
She's just been told what there is. But when you actually got to touch it, taste it, feel it, up or close, the visceral response she has, I think, is going to be a little more profound than what she has now. And I know you'll probably go to this, but I think BTK's daughter, when she came in to talk to her, gave a lot of clarity to what she's going through. Because, I mean, think about it. You are in the midst of a multiverse. I mean, just think of Marvel Comics. I mean, literally, you are living in one universe, and all of a sudden, you were just told, no, there's two universes you're living in, and you're completely unaware that this other one's running parallel to you with your dad's living in too.
Yeah.
And it's a mind bend. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And so Asa's completely deciding to that other universe doesn't exist. And Victoria is sitting there saying, huh, I think that other universe does exist because the evidence seems pretty hard for it to exist. So how do I deal with that? What do I keep a toe here, keep a toe here? And so you see her wrestling with this. It's going to be a long road.
Yeah, and Carrie has struggled with that. BTK's daughter, obviously, throughout her life, she wrote a book about it. She's been an advocate for other families who are struggling with a situation like this, because she's very much in the same sort of shoes that the daughter here is in right now.
Very similar.
It's a weird thing to think about. I was just in Wichita the other day, me being me. It's the first time I've been back there for about a decade. Me and my daughter, we drove around Park City, showed her where BTK's house was, went into the grocery store where he used to work. And I used to go to that grocery store regularly. It was my grocery store. And I'm like, hey, did you know about, I was like giving her the fun facts of BTK. She's like, oh really? Anyway. But
we need new hobbies, don't we?
Yeah. Where it's like, we're in Wichita. What should we do for the first thing? Let's go to find the BTK house or where it was. And let's go to the grocery store. Let's go to Leakers. There's the gas station Carrie worked at that she took. Yeah. But I digress. Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Always a pleasure. What Robin just illuminated isn't just about Asa Elrip or Victoria Huraman. It's about the human mind's desperate need to make sense of the impossible. Asa, facing the complete dismantling of her life, appears to have made a choice to cling to the story she knows, to the man who once saved her. Because to accept the alternative means rewriting every memory, every emotion, every belief she built her life on. And for someone nearing the twilight of that life, the emotional cost of tearing it all down may simply be too great. Victoria, on the other hand, hasn't made that choice because she can't. She didn't choose this life, the father, or this fall from grace. She's still forming who she is, and now forced to do that in the shadow of a criminal investigation, tabloid headlines, and a truth that seems to shift every time she breathes. Robin spoke about the concept of multiverse, two realities running parallel. The one where your father built you a dollhouse and kissed you goodnight, and the one where that same man may have buried bodies by the beach. And here's the cruel part. Both can be true. That's what makes it so hard. We often ask, how could she not know? Maybe the better question is, what would you do if you found out everything you knew was a lie? This isn't just the story of a killer. It's the story of those left behind emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. The people who now have to figure out how to live in a world that no longer makes sense. People like Asa, people like Victoria, people like Carrie Rawson. It's a story that will never have a happy ending. And a journey very unique to each and every individual experiencing it. What are your thoughts on this case and where it's at? Tell me in the comment section on YouTube. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, please do check out our YouTube channel as well. Hit subscribe on the podcast, then go hit subscribe on YouTube. And yeah, joining these conversations, let us know what you think. You can also see us do the show, and we have other exclusive segments on YouTube as well. So please do check that out. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. Thank you guys for watching. We'll talk again real soon.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
If you're a label reader, this one's for you, because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house, in small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients, plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals, and safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler, just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica, non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HibaBotanica.com. That's
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a label reader, this one's for you because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house, in small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients, plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals, and safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler, just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica, non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HibaBotanica.com. That's
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different.
To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you're a label reader, this one's for you. Because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house. In small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients. Plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals. And safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler. Just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica. Non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HebaBotanica.com. That's X. If you're a label reader, this one's for you. Because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house. In small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients. Plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals. And safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler. Just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica. Non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HebaBotanica.com. That's X. If you're a label reader, this one's for you. Because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house. In small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients. Plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals. And safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler. Just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica. Non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HebaBotanica.com. That's X.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.